Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really digging into a book that feels incredibly relevant, maybe more relevant now than ever. It's Daniel H. Pink's Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us.
Yeah, this one's essential. Because it tackles something huge, the way we try to motivate people, you know, at work, in schools, even at home, it's often completely wrong.
Exactly. The book's core mission, really, is to unpack this startling scientific truth that our go-to tool, the carrot and stick, isn't just fading. Pink argues it's actively hurting us in the modern world.
We're taught, basically, reward equals performance. Good grades, here's some cash, hit your sales target, bonus time. Pink calls that motivation 2.0.
Right, motivation 2.0. And he says it's everywhere, but it was designed for, like, the industrial age, yeah. Factory lines, routine tasks.
And that's the crux of why it matters today. Work has changed so much. Motivation 2.0 worked, sort of, for those algorithmic tasks, follow the rules, step by step.
But most valuable work now isn't like that, is it?
Not at all. It's heuristic. It needs creativity, problem solving. There's often no clear script. So if you want people truly engaged, truly performing at their peak in the 21st century, well, you need an upgrade, a new operating system for motivation.
Okay, let's talk about the guy proposing this upgrade, Daniel Pink. His background is interesting. He wasn't always a business guru type. He was actually chief speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore for a while.
Yeah, back in the mid-90s. That background, I think, gives him a unique perspective. He's not the academic doing the primary research in a lab.
So what is his role then?
He's a synthesizer, probably one of the best out there. He takes all this complex behavioral science, psychology, economics stuff that's been building for decades.
And makes it make sense for the rest of us.
Exactly. He bridges that gap between the science and how you might actually use it as a leader, an educator, or just, you know, in your own life.
He's like a translator for these really important, but maybe overlooked, scientific findings.
Yeah.
He sees the evidence and asks, okay, why are we still running things like it's 1890?
Precisely. And he does it with such clear, compelling stories. That's why Drive made such a splash. It challenges the status quo, but makes the alternative feel intuitive once you see the evidence.
Which brings us neatly to the book's central idea. If motivation 2.0, those external if-then rewards, are broken for today's work, what's the fix?
The fix, according to Pink, is motivation 3.0. And this version runs on intrinsic motivation, the desire to do things because they matter, because they're interesting, because they're part of something important.
It's about the internal drives, not the external carrots.
Right. And he boils it down to three core psychological needs, universal needs. He calls it the AMP framework.
AMP, autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
You got it. Autonomy. Our need to direct our own lives, mastery, that urge to get better and better at stuff that matters to us, and purpose, the desire to do what we do in the service of something larger than ourselves.
So the goal shifts completely. It's not about controlling people to get compliance anymore.
No, it's about creating environments where people can engage fully, where these intrinsic drives, AMP, can flourish.
So the book isn't just saying carrots bad. It's actually a guide, a practical manual for building those kinds of environments, workplaces, schools, wherever.
Yeah, absolutely. It lays out the how.
Okay, let's dive into that evidence, because this is where the traditional thinking really starts to crumble. Pink brings up some experiments from way back that should have changed everything.
Oh, yeah, like Harry Harlow's monkey studies in the 1940s. It's wild. Harlow set up these mechanical puzzles for the monkeys, expecting he'd need to bribe them with food to solve them.
But that's not what happened, right?
Not at all. The monkeys just started solving them. For fun, apparently. Just the intrinsic satisfaction of figuring it out.
Okay, that's interesting in itself. But the kicker.
The kicker is when Harlow did introduce rewards, food treats for solving the puzzles, their performance actually went down. They made more errors, solved them slower. The reward messed things up.
Wow. Okay, so it's not just about monkeys. There's the famous candle problem, too.
Right, Carl Dunker's candle problem. Classic creativity test. You get a candle, some tacks, and a box, and matches. Your job.
Yeah.
Attach the candle to the wall so wax doesn't drip on the table.
The trick is realizing you need to use the box. The tacks came in as a shelf, right? Thinking outside the box, literally.
Exactly. Overcoming functional fixedness, seeing the box as more than just a container.
So Pink highlights studies where they timed people solving this. One group gets nothing. The other gets promised a cash reward for finishing fast. Logic says money motivates, so the reward group should be faster.
You'd think so. But well, nope, the group offered the reward consistently took longer.
Why? What's the mechanism there?
It seems those if-then rewards, the extrinsic motivators, narrow our focus. They make us tunnel-visioned, which is fine if there's a clear, simple path.
Like on an assembly line.
Right. But for problems needing creativity, needing that wider conceptual view, like seeing the box differently, that narrow focus actually blocks the solution. It kills creativity.
So Pink lists these like seven deadly flaws of extrinsic rewards.
Yeah.
Extinguishing intrinsic motivation, crushing creativity. What else?
Diminishing performance over time, encouraging cheating or shortcuts, fostering short-term thinking. Think about scandals like Wells Fargo.
Oh, yeah, where employees open millions of fake accounts.
Exactly. Driven by aggressive sales targets and bonuses. The external reward became the only thing that mattered, so people took the low road, ethically speaking.
That's a powerful, scary example. But, okay, to be fair, Pink doesn't say rewards are always bad, does he?
No, he's very clear on that. For tasks that are genuinely routine, dull, algorithmic, the stuff nobody really wants to do, but it needs doing, rewards can work.
But there are conditions, right?
Yeah. Yes. First, pay people fairly overall, so money isn't a constant issue. Then, if you use rewards for dull tasks, make them unexpected, now that rewards, given after the task is done, not if then beforehand. And explain why the task was necessary.
So motivation 2.0 has its place, but it's a very limited place. For the deeper stuff, the type I behavior, we need AMP. Let's start with autonomy.
Autonomy, yeah, the desire for self-direction. It's not about anarchy or everyone doing whatever they want. It's about having meaningful control. Pink breaks it down with the four T's.
Task, time, technique, and team.
Right. Control over what you do, task, when you do it, time, how you do it, technique, and who you do it with. Team. Not every job can offer all four completely, but increasing any of them boosts motivation.
But hold on, how does that work in practice? If everyone decides their own when and how, doesn't that lead to chaos? How do things actually get done?
Well, the key is shifting the focus from process to results. Look at ROWE results-only work environment, pioneered at Best Buy, I think.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Management basically says, here's what needs to be accomplished. How and when you do it is up to you, as long as the work gets done well and on time. It focuses on output, not on FaceTime or rigid schedules.
That requires a lot of trust.
Huge trust, but it gives people massive autonomy over time and technique.
And what about task autonomy? Choosing what you work on.
Good examples there are companies like Atlassian with their ship it days, or Google's famous 20% time.
Right, where engineers could spend a day a week on their own projects.
Exactly. Atlassian gives employees 24 hours to work on literally anything they want, related to the company or not. And amazing innovations come out at that time. New products, fixes, efficiencies. It proves that when you give smart people freedom, they often use it incredibly productively on stuff that matters.
Okay, so autonomy fuels the where and how. What about the second pillar, mastery?
Mastery. This taps into that deep human urge to just get better at things, to improve, to develop skills, to meet challenges. Once people have some autonomy, they naturally gravitate towards activities where they can experience mastery.
This sounds like Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's work on flow, that state where you're totally absorbed in something challenging but doable.
Absolutely connected. Flow is often the experience of mastery in action. You're pushed right to the edge of your abilities, fully engaged, time flies. That's deeply satisfying. That's the feeling mastery provides.
Pink has some laws of mastery, doesn't he?
Yeah, three key ones. First, mastery is a mindset. You need what Carol Dweck calls a growth mindset. The belief that your abilities aren't fixed, that you can improve with effort. If you think you're just not good at math, you won't put in the effort to master it.
Makes sense. What's the second?
Second, mastery is a pain. And this is important. It's not always fun. Real mastery requires deliberate practice, grit, pushing through frustration. It requires effort, sometimes a lot of effort.
Yeah.
That struggle is actually part of what makes the achievement meaningful.
It's not just about having a good time. It's about striving.
Exactly. And the third law. This one's kind of mind-bending. Mastery is an asymptote.
An asymptote, like in math. The line, a curve approaches but never touches.
Precisely that. You can get closer and closer to complete mastery. You can always improve, but you never fully arrive. There's always more to learn, further to go. And that's actually motivating. The pursuit itself is the reward because the finish line keeps moving.
So the game never truly ends, which keeps you engaged. Wow. Okay, so we have autonomy, the freedom to direct ourselves.
Yeah.
Mastery, the drive to improve. What completes the picture?
Purpose, the third pillar. This answers the why. Why are we doing this? Autonomy and mastery are powerful, but purpose gives them context and meaning. It's that yearning to connect what we do to something bigger than just ourselves.
And Pink argues businesses are shifting focus here too, from just profit to something more.
Yes, a shift from pure profit maximization to what he calls purpose maximization. Now, this isn't about abandoning profit, not at all. It's about recognizing that pursuing purpose alongside profit is actually good business.
How so?
Well, look at companies really known for their strong sense of purpose. Patagonia's environmentalism, TOMS shoes giving model. They tend to attract really passionate, talented employees. Customers connect with them more deeply. They often build more resilient, successful businesses in the long run.
So purpose isn't just a feel-good add-on. It can be a competitive advantage.
Absolutely. And there's a generational aspect too, isn't there? Pink points out that, you know, maybe older generations looked for meaning later in life after achieving career success. But younger generations, millennials, Gen Z, they seem to want that sense of purpose right from the start. They're asking why much earlier.
Okay, so bringing this all together, if you had to pull out the biggest aha moments from Drive, what would they be?
I think the first huge theme is simply the mismatch. The staggering gap between what science knows about motivation, this intrinsic type I stuff, and what most organizations do sticking with outdated type X carrots and sticks. This mismatch isn't trivial. It causes massive disengagement and leaves so much potential untapped.
Yeah, that's huge. And related to that, for me, is the clear distinction between type I and type X behavior. Pink makes it so clear that type I, the intrinsically motivated folks, don't just perform better creatively. They also tend to have better psychological well-being and, crucially, act more ethically. Type X is all about the shortest path to the reward, even if it's the low road.
Right. Which leads to the third big takeaway, kind of the operating principle difference. Control versus engagement. Old management, motivation 2.0, was about control. And control only really gets you compliance. People do the minimum required.
Just enough not to get fired, or maybe just enough to get the bonus.
Exactly. But autonomy, mastery, and purpose, the AMP framework that fosters true engagement, that's where you get the discretionary effort, the passion, the innovation. Compliance versus engagement, huge difference.
Pink really does have a knack for crystallizing these ideas.
Yeah.
Let's maybe touch on a couple of quotes that really capture the essence.
Yeah, he has some great lines. How about this one, hitting on that ethics point we just made? The problem with making an extrinsic reward the only destination that matters is that some people will choose the quickest route there, even if it means taking the low road.
Oof. Yeah. That directly explains so many scandals, doesn't it? From corporate fraud to cheating in schools, when the external marker is everything.
The internal compass gets ignored. And then there's the one that nails the core difference in management style. Control leads to compliance. Autonomy leads to engagement.
Simple. Powerful. If you want people to just follow orders, control them. If you want them to bring their whole selves, their best ideas, you need to give them autonomy.
And maybe the most provocative one challenges the whole structure. Management is a technology from the 1850s, but what we need today is engagement.
Wow. Calling management itself an outdated technology.
Yeah, he's saying those hierarchical command and control structures were built for industrial efficiency, for compliance. But for the creative, knowledge-based work of today, we need something fundamentally different focused on engagement.
Okay, this is all fascinating, but how do we actually use this? If you're listening and you manage a team, or even just manage yourself, what are some concrete steps?
Pink offers practical ideas. For managers, he suggests doing an autonomy audit. Don't just guess, actually ask your team. On a scale, how much control do they feel they have over their task, time, technique, and team? Find the biggest gaps. That's your starting point for change.
That sounds doable. What else?
Rethink performance reviews. Instead of just focusing on metrics tied to bonuses, make them conversations about progress toward mastery. What skills are they developing? How are they improving? And connect their work back to the larger purpose. Make it developmental, not just transactional.
And this applies outside the office too, right? Like in parenting or education.
Hugely. Pink strongly advises moving away from reward systems for learning stickers, for reading, money for grades. That stuff can actually kill the intrinsic love of learning.
So what's the alternative?
Focus on effort and strategy, not just outcomes or innate talent. Praise persistence. Cultivate that growth mindset and give kids choices in their learning project-based approaches where they have some autonomy over the topic or method. Make learning intrinsically engaging.
And for ourselves, personal development.
Two simple, powerful things, Pink suggests. First, find your flow test. Pay attention to those activities where you lose track of time, where you feel challenged and engaged. That's where your potential for mastery lies. Lean into that.
Discover what naturally absorbs you.
Exactly. And second, try to define your life's purpose in a single sentence. It's harder than it sounds, but having that personal mission statement helps you align your daily actions with what truly matters to you. It provides that why.
Okay, as we wrap up, what was the single most surprising or impactful thing for you revisiting Pink's work?
For me, it's the sheer universality he argues for. This isn't some perk for creative types or tech workers. Autonomy, mastery, purpose. Pink makes the case these are fundamental human psychological needs, like food or safety. Meeting them isn't nice management, it's just effective management that taps into how humans are actually wired.
That's a great point. It reframes it completely. For me, I think the biggest takeaway is how deeply this challenges our default reliance on financial incentives. We just assume money is the prime motivator, especially at work. Pink forces you to question that, especially for complex creative tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves a big question for you, listener, to think about. In a world, in organizations that are still largely built around motivation 2.0's extrinsic rewards and measurements, how can you realistically carve out space for autonomy, mastery, and purpose for yourself, for your team? It's a real tension to navigate.
It absolutely is a crucial one.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.